Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top of Daf Yud Tes. In our margin, you will notice a Nosei / Mivneh heading. Nosei, the topic heading, Mivneh structural note, where a diamond is featured. If you scan ahead in your Gemara text, you will notice a number of diamonds appearing along the way. This is explained as Dugmos are examples, Shel Shtoros, of different kinds of documents, Shenimtsu, that were found. The Oileh HaSheila, and the question arises, Haim Yesh Lachshosh, should one suspect, L'shema Kosav Litein Benison, V'lo Nosan Ad Tishrei, a date that appears in the document might read Nisan. Nisan is a half year before the month of Tishrei, so that there is a date indicating when the document was written, but maybe it wasn't actually given and put into effect until a half year later, until Tishrei. V'im machzirin, and if you do return the document, and what we just mentioned is really the reality, then mafsidim es halakuchos, we would then cause a loss to those who made purchases from the party in question. Shekonu bein Nisan l'Tishrei, people bought property between the month of Nisan and Tishrei, a period of time that the document in question didn't really go into effect yet. And therefore, people who purchased from the party in question would not be liable to pay for the debt reflected in the document. We'll, of course, see concrete examples as we go through the Gemara, but by way of general frame of thinking, if people had purchased, we'll say, legitimately, and then are subjected illegitimately to paying debts that others owed, that would be sufficient reason not to return the documents. We have employed another marking. You'll notice a circle around the different documents, so that we've listed them on the side of the Gemara, but if you keep one finger in your Gemara text, you'll see the first is Gitei Nashim, a divorce document, and we'll explain in the Gemara what financial problem will be associated with a divorce document. B'shtorei Chov, bills of debt. Shihurei Avodim are documents indicating the freedom of a slave. Similar to the concept of divorcing a woman, there's a concept of freeing a slave, freeing a heathen slave. And then there is shovar. Shovar is a receipt. We'll now turn to the Gemara, where we open with the word gufa. Gufa always indicates something that had been mentioned earlier in passing and is now going to be the focus of the Gemara's attention. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara text indicating Yud Ches Amud Beis, where you can see this comes from. So Gufa Motza Get Isha Bashuk. A person found a divorce document in a public area. Bizman Shabal Moideh Yachsir Leisha. When the husband admits he gave her the divorce document, then the get is given to the woman. Ein habal moide, if he denies having given her the get, lo yachsir, lo lozeh, velo lozeh. We don't give it to the husband, nor do we give it to the woman. Bizman shabal moide miha yachsir leisha. when the husband admits, yes, I gave it to her, I divorced her, and it fell from her, then we give it back to the woman. Is there, you might ask, is there any problem with that? Is there any chiddush in that? So the Gemara asks, is there not room for suspecting the following? And now we have a long question. Velechush, maybe we should suspect the following. Shema kosav litein benisan velonosan lo ad tishrei. Maybe that husband wrote up the get, put a date in it in the month of Nisan, and didn't actually divorce her until Tishrei. In a case like that, the husband is a regular married man until Tishrei, during which time he has the rights to fruits that grow in fields she may have brought into the marriage. Properties that a woman brings into the marriage are classified either as Nichsei Malug or Nichsei Tzon Barzel. In the case of Nichsei Malug, a husband is entitled to the fruits, and included in that right is the right to sell the fruits to purchasers and benefit from that income. Maybe, in our case, the get was written up in Nisan. She wasn't actually divorced till Tishrei. The Ozel Baal Zovin Peri Minisan V'Ad Tishrei, and the husband would have continued selling fruits between the month of Nisan, as he has been selling up till now as a regular married man, and he'll continue that practice, selling the fruits until Tishrei, the time at which he actually divorces her. At the time, of course, at which he cannot sell fruits anymore. She's now an independent entity. It's her property with her fruits. But up till that point, he can sell them. And that's what he did. Umafka Gita, and should we not suspect that she'll... Mafka is literally to whip out, to take out, to produce the get. The Kosav B'Nisan, with the date of Nisan in it, she'll take this out and go to the people that purchased fruits from her husband and claim, you were purchasing fruits beyond the time I was divorced. Look, in the divorce document it says I was divorced a half year earlier, in Nisan. V'asyo l'mitraf l'kuchos shelo k'din. And then she is going to collect from purchasers, proving her rights to the fruits, i.e. her husband had no right to sell according to the date in her divorce document, and claim restitution from the purchasers shelo kadin in a non-legal fashion. Why do we call it non-legal? Because she wasn't divorced at Nisan. She was divorced only a half year later. The husband had a right to sell. They had a right to buy from him. The Gemara continues and says that this suspicion, or that a wrongful collection is going to rise, is really not a case. Honicho lemando omar, things are fine that we give the get back to the woman when the husband admits he divorced her, and we're not worried about her wrongful collection from them. There's a madoma, there's an opinion that says, Kevon shenosan einov ligarsha, once a husband decides to divorce his wife, even before he actually divorces her, literally he gave his eyes, meaning he was looking to divorce her, shuv ein lebal peros shapir, the husband really has no right to the fruits anymore. So, according to that opinion, at what point should the husband have stopped selling the fruits? In fact, from Nisan. And the claim the woman makes from the purchasers, even though she wasn't divorced till a half year later, her claim is legitimate. So that we're not causing a wrongful collection by giving her the get. But according to the opinion that says that a husband has the right to sell the fruits until the actual giving of the get, until the actual divorce takes place, what is there to say? Meaning, is there not a problem in giving the get back to the woman in accordance with the source above that said when the husband admits we do give her the get? Is that not going to endanger those people who may have purchased peros from her husband between Nisan and Tishrei? She'll come and whip out the get, showing that she was divorced from Nisan, claiming that they should not have bought the fruits when, according to this opinion, they had a right to buy the fruits. The Gemara answers, Ki asya lemitraf, when a woman comes to collect from purchasers the value of the fruits that they wrongfully bought, namely that really belonged to her, when a woman tries to make a collection on those grounds, Amrinon law, the purchasers will tell her, I see raya emas mota gita liyodach. Bring proof. When did you actually gain possession of the get? When were you actually divorced? According to this approach, the date in the get doesn't establish anything. It does not empower her. So, with that, then, we understand that the return of the get to the woman is not going to wrongfully endanger or subject the purchasers to wrongful collection. Umay shno, the Gemara asks, and notice we have a long question marking, and the thrust of the question is, we just said that purchasers have a defense mechanism, namely, Icy Raya, that which we dashed underline. Icy Raya, Emas Mota Gitaliyodach. That's their defense mechanism. And we rely on purchasers taking that initiative of insisting on her bringing a proof. When did she actually get the get? The Gemara asks, but we have another scenario where we don't seem to rely on that. The Gemara asks, and again we note a long question. What is the difference between the case of the get isha and the following case of bills of collection? It says in the source that these bills of collection, if the lender has a lien upon the property of the borrower, who, when we speak about a lien, bear in mind we're talking about the possibility of the borrower in the loan situation having sold properties to purchasers after the borrower borrowed the money. If there is a guarantee written into the document, everyone will agree that those purchasers are then subject to collection on the part of the lender if the borrower himself defaults on the loan. So we have this Taneg source that says if the document has a lien written into it, v'ukimna kishechayav moideh, and we've established that the source that says lo yachzir is talking about a case even where the borrower admits I didn't pay up. And even so, even where he's admitting I didn't pay up, the source says do not give it to the lender. Do not give the bill of collection to the lender. And why not? Umishum, notice we're going to read two lines as a phrase. Shema kosav lulvois benison, v'lolova atishrei, v'kotorif lekuchos shelo kedin. There may be a date in the shtar, this bill of collection, if you were to give it back to the malva, maybe the date doesn't reflect when the actual loan was extended. Maybe the shtar was written up, we'll say prematurely, earlier than the actual loan. The actual borrowing didn't take place from Tishrei. Tishrei is a half a year later than Nisan. And during that time, the ultimate borrower sold properties before he took out the loan. He sold properties. Those properties are not subject to the lien. After all, he had not been indebted during that time. He didn't borrow until Tishrei. But if you give the bill of collection back to the lender, He, the lender, will approach people that may have bought after Nisan, before Tishrei, and say, look, I have a bill of collection that predates your purchase. You purchased after Nisan. There are 6 months between Nisan and Tishrei. You purchased during those months, but my loan predates it. My loan was from Nisan. So the land that you bought is really indebted to me. I have a lien on it. And of course he doesn't, because the actual loan didn't take place until Tishrei. Well, and as a result of that, as a result of wrongfully subjecting purchasers to cover the debt, we don't give the shtar, we don't give the bill of collection back to the lender. Well, why not? Hosam nami lahader. Why not return it to the lender? V'chi osi lemitraf, and when that lender comes to collect from the purchasers, name all lay, let the purchasers say to him, to the lender who's trying to come to collect. By the way, parallel to the lady above trying to collect fruit value from purchasers, let the purchasers here say to the lender, I see raya, emas moto, shtarchov liyodoch. You bring proof when you actually got the bill of collection, which would, at the point that he got the bill of collection, it's at that point that they would become subject to the lien. And if the loan wasn't extended until Tishrei, this insistence on the part of the Lukuchos will reveal that they're not subject to covering the debt, that the lender has no right to collect from them. So why don't we rely on what we were relying on before? In the case of the Get Isha, we pointed out when the husband admits that he divorced her, she receives the get, the found get, and as far as the subjection of purchasers to wrongful collection, we rely upon the purchasers taking the initiative of Aisi Raya Masmata Gita Liyadach. Let's do the same thing here with the lender coming to collect from the purchasers. Give the bill of collection back to the lender, and if he comes to collect from them, they will take the initiative of insisting on bring proof. When did you get that bill of collection? I.e., we're not really going to be relying on the date in the shtar, in the shtarchov, in the bill of collection. So, in very simply, what's the difference between the case of the Get Isha and the case of the shtarchov? You'll notice as we go on in the Gemara, we have, first of all, a long answer. You'll notice a double underlining. We've highlighted the first phrase, Hocha Gabi Get Isha, and in contrast, Hocha Gabi Shtarchov, the two issues are highlighted with their own explanations. On the side, under our Mivne heading, the structural note, we've indicated this marking, Hocha Gabi, etc., and what are we trying to accomplish here? Hesber, we're going to give an explanation, lehevdel, to the difference. Bain get isha, shelo machzirin. The case of the get isha, I should say in the case of the shtar chov, that we don't give back because of the chashash of shema kosav litemei, because of the earlier date, and the shtar chov, And the Get Isha, where we return and we're not worried about that. Now the Gemara, the answer. Amri, we say, Hocho Gabi Get Isha. In the case of the return of the Get Isha, where the husband admits, I gave her the get, and we're not concerned with any wrongful collection, Osi Lokeach V'tova, the Lokeach, we'll say, is motivated to come and demand from her. Omar, the lokeach figures, Hai dehadruha nihalo rabbonon legita, that which the rabbonon, the rabbis, returned the get to her, Mishom delo taragin v'tesev, so that she shall not remain withheld from being able to remarry. The word ta'agin is associated with the word aguna. That's a woman who is in a state where she can't remarry. So the rabbis were concerned that she receives the get as to avoid being a situation where she, tasiv is to sit, so to speak, sit in a state of aguna, of being unable to remarry. That's why the Rabbanan were willing to give her the get, to make sure that she can remarry. Hashta de ko'asula mitraf. However, now that she comes to collect from us, the purchasers, we who purchased fruits from her husband, Tezel v'tesi raya, we will insist on her going and bringing a proof. Eimas mota gita liyoda. When did the get come to her? So, built into the whole divorce circumstance, the divorce situation, the purchasers understand the, we'll say, the quick return of the get to the woman, but at the same time are concerned with their own welfare, and have reason, we'll say, to suspect that maybe they're being collected from wrongfully. So they'll insist on her bringing proof. When did she get the get? Ocha gabi shtar choiv, in the case of a bill of collection being returned, if it were to be returned, to the lender, lo osi lokeach v'tova, the lokeach, the purchaser, the one who purchased land from the borrower, doesn't have the same, we'll say, motivation or level of his or level of suspicion that the woman had. He won't come and say, bring me proof. Omar, he will figure, the purchaser, the one who bought from the borrower, he will figure madrua nihalei rabbonin l'shtarchov, from the fact that the rabbis were willing to give the bill of collection back to the lender, pshita l'mayhil chasadrua nihalei, it's obvious, why did they give him the bill of collection? L'mitrafu, they gave him the bill of collection to, in order for him to be able to collect the debt that's due to him. Shma mino komu rabbonin b'milsa. So the purchasers will figure that it must be then that the rabbis analyzed and researched the matter and established that this lender has the legitimate right to use his shtar for collection purposes. And before me, the purchaser, he got the shtar. He, the lender, got the shtar, indicating he had extended the loan, i.e., before I bought the land. So this is all in the mind of the purchaser. And as a result of this being in his mind, he's not, being that he reached this conclusion that the rabbi certainly researched the matter and were confident that the lender got the shtar before I bought the land, he, the purchaser, is not motivated to seek out additional proof from the lender. When did you get the shtar? So as a result of all of this, as a result of the mindset of the purchasers in the case of the shtar chov, we do not give the shtar chov back to the lender, even in a situation where the borrower says, I didn't pay up the debt yet. Shichur avodim v'chulei, tonu rabbonan, motzo shtar shichur b'shuk. Person found a bill of release, of servitude, in the market, in the public area. When the Rav is the owner of the slave, admits, I freed the slave, we give the shtar shichur, the bill of release, the document of release to the Eved, to the slave. Ein harav moide lo yachzir lo lozeh v'lo lozeh. If the master does not concede or admit that he set his slave free, we do not return the shtar shichur to either party, not to the owner nor to the slave. Bizman sheharav moide miho. However, when the master does admit he set his slave free, yachzir levit, we give the shtar shichur to the slave. And now we begin a long question. Ve'amai, why do we give the why do we take that risk, so to speak, in giving it back to the slave? Is there not the following problematic circumstance or scenario that could arise? And all of this long question is to describe the problematic situation in giving the shtar shichur to the slave. Once again, when the master admits that he set him free. So now in the Gemara, Nehu, should we not suspect Shemo kosav litein lo ibenison velo nosan lo ad tishrei? The bill of release, the shtar, the document of release, may have been written up in Nisan and not given to the slave, i.e., he wasn't actually freed until Tishrei. So he is a slave for all purposes until Tishrei. And now, if we give this document to the slave, are we not empowering him as follows? V'ozal avdo v'kona nechosa minishson v'ad tishrei. This slave may have gone and bought properties between the month of Nisan and Tishrei, namely while he is still a slave. And a slave that acquires something, it automatically becomes the possession of the owner of the slave. The Ozil Harav Vizavninu, and the owner of the slave will have gone and sold those properties that the Eved bought. As we just indicated a moment ago, if the Eved goes and buys properties during the time that he's still officially a slave, it becomes the property. It's automatically the property of the slave's owner, and the slave's owner has a right to go and sell those properties to people that he sees fit to sell to, and that's a legitimate sale. And then as time goes on, umapik le l'shichur, the slave will then whip out the document of release, the kosav benison, that has the Nisan date in it, indicating, if you look at the document at face value, this is a free man. This slave was really a free man from Nisan. V'kotorif l'kucho shelo kedin. And he's going to go to those purchasers who bought from the slave master and say to them, how could you have bought properties from the master, but those are properties that I bought as a free man, and that slave master had no right to sell it to you. And the slave will thereby be empowered with this document to collect from purchasers shelo kadin, in a non-legal fashion. So is this not a problem? So ho ni chalemando omar. This is not a problem. Things work out well according to the following school of thought. You'll see there are two schools of thought the Gemara presents. According to this first school of thought, in fact, there's no problem. Ho ni chalemando omar zchusu le'eved shiyotze mitachas rabu lecherus. There's a school of thought that says that it's beneficial for a slave to go free, to leave his master's control. Uchabaye, and another element that we add, in accordance with Abaye, the Omar Edov Bechasumov Zochin Loi Shapir. Abaye holds, and this is a point we've seen in the past, that when witnesses sign the document, in this case the freedom document, the slave is considered free from the time of signing. That, we'll read that again. Edov, the witnesses, the chasumov, with their signing upon the document, zochin lei, that thereby grants the benefits that the document represents from that point in time, even though the slave was not handed the document until later. The slave is nevertheless considered free from Nisan, and when that slave approaches the purchasers who bought from the slave owner between or after Nisan, before Tishrei, that slave has a right to collect from them. After all, he was technically speaking, let's say a beneficiary of freedom from Nissan. So properties that he bought between Nissan and Tishrei were really his own to keep, not his master's to then sell to the purchasers. So the slave has a right to collect from them, and there's no fear of some kind of wrongful collection taking place. The slave's collection from the purchasers is legitimate. So as far as a problem in giving the shtar shichur back to the slave when the master admits he set him free, no legal problem arises. Elo laman domar choyvu levet sheyotzei mitachas yad rabba lecherus. But according to the other school of thought that says it is detrimental to a slave to become free, and as such, this idea the signing upon the document establishes his freedom doesn't apply, because we have a concept that we say zochin l'adam shelo b'fanav, but not chovin l'adam shelo b'fanav. We don't create detriment to someone unless he is present, unless he, in this case, actually receives the document of freedom. So he's not considered a free man, according to this school of thought. My ikol amemar. Why do we return the shtar shichur to the eved? The above scenario could result where the eved approaches purchasers with a Nissan date, claiming he's free already, and that the master had no right to sell, when in fact the master did have a right to sell, and this slave has no business trying to collect from them. The Gemara answers, and very similar to what we said above, Dechi osi lemitraf, when a slave comes to purchasers with his claim that he was already a free man, Amrinon le, the purchasers will say to the slave, you claim you were already a free man, I see raya imas mota shichru liyodach, you bring proof when the document reached your hands, when you actually became free. And that will serve to protect them, the purchasers, when the slave under those circumstances won't be able to show his freedom until Tishrei, and therefore their purchase will remain intact and no wrongful collection will take place. That's why, just to repeat, we are not subjecting anyone to an unlawful collection or subjecting anyone to a risk by giving the freedom document back to the slave. Daitiki, Matona, V'chule. We saw in the Mishnah a reference to the various additional types of documents that we do not return. On the grounds, as the Mishnah said, the suspicion that maybe they were merely written up but not actually given. Tonu Rabbonin, E Zohi Daitiki. What is that? What is that document? The Brisa answers and explains. It's the word Daitiki is a contraction of what is in effect a will of a person in the throes of death, who's deathly ill. Da tehe lemekam v'liyos shimeis nechosav leploni. This document shall be or establishes the transfer of property, that in the event that the owner dies, the properties will go to so and so. So you can see the word daitiki is a contraction of da tehe lemekam, etc. Matona. The Mishnah made reference to Matona. What is that? Kol shikosuv bo, any type of gift document, a document that represents a transfer of property, in which it says, mehayoyim ulachar misa, that the transfer takes place from today and after the party's death. The Gemara asks, Almo, Are we to conclude from this, that only if it has that expression from today and after death, which, by the way, Rashi explains, let's look at the Rashi, about a quarter of the way up from the bottom, Mehayom Lachar Misa, Guf HaKarka Koni Lo Min Hayom, the principal piece of land, the land itself, is yours from today. Ve'ein Lo Od Rishus L'Mochra, Ve'lit Lo Rishab, and the original owner no longer has any right to sell it, nor to give it or bequeath it to others. Vaperos Eino Ochel Kol Yemei Chayov. However, the fruit from the property is not entitled to the receiver as long as the giver, the owner, remains alive. Elo Lachar Misa, the benefit from the fruits is only after death. So the Gemara is asking, are we to say that only under those circumstances, namely where if a person transfers a property in that fashion, is it a gift? And if not, namely, if he were to transfer everything from right now, lock, stock, and barrel, the not only the principal, but the fruits as well, it wouldn't be a gift? To the contrary, all the more so, where you're transferring everything immediately, that certainly would be a good gift, a binding gift. So what are we to make of this source? By defining matona as only that in which it says mehayom ulachar misa, the Gemara answers, Omar Abaye, hochi komar. The source is to be understood as follows: Ezohi matnas bori. What is an example of a gift given by a healthy individual? Shehi kematnas shchiv merad lo koni elo liachar misa, where they will say the full transfer doesn't take place until after the healthy person's death. So once again, we're looking for an example, an exceptional case of a gift where the gift, and specifically the rights to the fruits on the part of the receiver of the gift, doesn't kick in until after the gift giver's demise. So the answer to that is, kol shekasuv bo, any kind of gift in which you see the following language, mehayom ulachar misa, which, as we explained before, that indicates the principle of the land is given to the receiver of the gift. However, the benefit of the fruits doesn't set in until after the gift giver's demise. And just to repeat the main point here, that is what would be that's an example of a healthy person giving a gift where the full benefit of the gift sets in after death, similar to the case of a matnas shchiv merah, where a person who is deciding to give over his properties in out of concern of his impending death. We should point out that in the case of a shchiv merah, if his circumstances would turn around and he would actually get better, then the gift would be void, because his whole motivation for giving the gift was because his expectation or fear of impending death. We continue in the Gemara. The Gemara here asks on the Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we saw Shtar Matona Daitiki. It said in the Mishnah, it is not to be given back to the owner of the document, the one whose the name in which the gift was given. Now, on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which reads as follows. Stira, we're going to raise a seeming contradiction, bein diuk mishnosenu, from an inference that one could draw from the Mishnah. In our Mishnah, just to repeat, it said, we don't give these documents back because maybe the owner wrote them up but decided not to give them. From that, we would be able to infer that if the owner said give them to the designated party, we would act in accordance with his instructions. So we're going to run into a stira, a contradiction between the inference from our Mishnah, u'braisa, and that which we see in a new Tanaic source, binyan shtore matona v'daitiki shenimtza, or shenimtzu, v'yomar nosein l'sitoi l'makabel. Case of these kind of documents where they were found, and the original owner says, give them to the receiver. Lefi Mishnah Seinu Noisnim, according to our Mishnah, we would cooperate. We would give it in accordance with his instructions. Lefi Abraisa Loi Noisnim. Afal Pishishneh Moidim, even though both parties agree to what is under discussion. In other words, the original owner says, yes, I gave him the gift, and the receiver says, I received it. We nevertheless, according to the Braisa, would not give it back. Now, the Gemara. Taima, the lo amar tnu, the reason in our Mishnah for our not giving the respective documents to the receivers, because the original owner did not say tnu, didn't say give it. Ha amar tnu, if the original owner had said give the documents to the respective receivers, nice, then we would have done so. Veraminu, we raise as a contradiction another Tanaic source, Motza daitikiois, apotikiois, umatonos. These are the different documents that we've already referred to. The daitikios is the plural of daitiki. Matonos, we've mentioned apotikios. Apotiki is another form of collection where a borrower earmarked a particular piece of land as a source of collection for a lender. These different documents, afal pi shishneim moedim lo yafsir, even though both parties admit, we do not give them to the designated party. Lo lazeh v'lo lazeh. We don't give it back to the original owner, nor do we give it to the receiver. And we glance at Rashi, lo yachzir. We don't give it back. Shema kosvo lazeh v'lo mosalo. Now, what we're reading in the Rashi, I think I would like to point out, is serves as a very fine introduction to the Gemara on Omid Beis. Now, once again, we don't give the documents back on what grounds? Because of the following fear. Maybe they were written up to give to the designated party, v'lo mosar lo, and the original owner never gave it to him, to the receiver written in the document, v'lo zocha b'karka, and the party whose name appears in the document never really gained hold of the property. The chazar v'kosav li'acher, and the original owner, as a result of his change of mind, wrote up a second document and gave it to a different party. U'mosar lo ashtar v'zochavo, and gave him the document, thereby entitling that receiver, that second party, to be the real owner. Ubo lachzer boy min hasheni, and the original party has regrets that he gave the gift to that second individual. Again, he has regrets post facto. He already gave ownership to the second party. V'roitze lo seis l'rishon, and original owner wants now to really give it to the first guy. The chafetz shimsu lo shtar zeh, and he desires that the receiver, the first party, should get this found document with that first party's name in it. And what will that enable him, the receiver, to do? Shiotzi eno bebeizdin. He'll produce the shtar in court. And the date in this document that we're now returning to that first individual is an earlier date than the shtar granting ownership to the second individual who became the real owner. And the first party will extricate the property from the hands of the second individual in a seeming legal fashion. As a result of this scenario, where there was a, once it, to review the main points, you have an original, we have three, we'll say three parties involved: an original owner, a first intended receiver, and a second party who became an actual receiver. There may be there, and we described a problem of giving this found document to the person whose name appears therein, even though both original owner and receiver admit or agree that this is a reality, when in fact maybe the original owner merely wrote up this document but never gave it to the first party, wrote up a second later dated document to a second party and really gave it to him. Second party becomes real owner by returning the found gift document to the party whose name appears therein. It may empower him wrongfully to, or say wrongfully empower him to extract the land, the gift, from the second party based on the earlier date that his shtar has in it. To review our main problem is we have a contradiction. According to our Mishnah, if the original party says give it to him, to the party whose name is written in the document, we would give it to him. According to the Brisa, which we explained extensively, we don't give it to the designated party. Omar Rabbi Abba bar Momo lo kashya. So Rabbi Abba says there is no contradiction. Now we are continuing at the top of Omid Beis, and he says ha bebori ha b'shchiv meirav. One case is the shtar is a matnas bori, it's a gift indicating a giving on the part of a healthy person, and the other source is dealing with a matnas shchiver, a gift issued by someone in the throes of death, deathly ill. Before we go further in the Gemara, there's some structural business we should take care of. And on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh heading, you can see we have Roman numerals 1 and 2. These cover Ad Kim'at Sofa Omud, until practically the end of the Omud, Shnei Lishonos, two versions. V'yeshli Yashev, Shnei Lishonos V'yashev Hastiro B'Mishosenu V'Abraisa. Two versions in how to resolve the seeming contradiction between our Mishnah and the inference from our Mishnah that we do give the document to the receiver, and the Braisa, which says we do not give the document to the receiver. We've highlighted with a diamond the words Masnisen and Braisa. These are the sources that need to be resolved. You'll see that we also have a double underlining which highlights the expressions Shchiv Meirah and Bebori. Now the Gemara. Masnisen Dekotoni, the Mishnah that taught Ha Omar Tenu Noisnim, the inference that from which we concluded that if the original owner says, yeah, give it to him, we do. B'shchiv meirah. The giver wrote up a document indicating that he was giving a gift because of his fear of impending death. So that we call this a shtar shchiv meirah. What is characteristic of such a shtar? Debar mehadehu. It's a kind of document reflecting an owner that's bar mahadir. He is capable of changing his mind. A shchiv meirah is, as we said, a person who's deathly ill, and we have allowances in his case where we accommodate, we'll say, his state of mind, and if he wants to back out of something, he has the right to back out. Notice we have a long point. All of this is to explain in the case of the Matnas Shchiv Meira, and why in such a case we'll return the document and not fear causing wrongful loss. The Amrinon. We figure as follows. My Ikot Lameimar. What problem could arise, what wrongful loss could arise in giving the Matnas Shchiv Meira to the designated party, the one whose name appears in the document? What chashash could arise as a result of doing that, of returning that? Dilma, are you afraid of the following? That Dilma Kosva Meikora Lahai, that it was written up initially for the person to whom we're saying, give it back now. And the original owner had a change of mind not to give it to this party. And the Shchiv Meira changed his mind to give it in actuality to someone else. And he did give it to that second party. And now the Shchiv Meira, the original owner, has regrets in his giving it to that second party. Well, how did he give it to that second party? Ibe matnas bori yohav alei. If he, the Shchiv Meira, gave it in a format that is characteristic of a healthy man, less lay pseida, there is no loss that's going to arise, that's going to happen to the second party. The chinafka tartin, when the two documents are produced in court, let us say, we have the document produced by the fellow we'll call him the first guy, who just received the found document. And we have the document, the Matnas Bori, that was given to the second party. When these two documents appear, Basrei Sazochi, the second fellow, will win. Daha Hodar Bei Mikomaisa. The first document, which was a Matnas Shchiv Meira, we mentioned before, a person who's a Shchiv Meira has a right to change his mind. It's not concretized until the guy actually dies. So it was like a matona in flux, or pending matona, pending gift. The second party has his document, a Matnas Bori, with a later date in it. He's not going to lose out. So by our giving the document, the Matnas Shchiv Meira, to the first party, we're not causing any wrongful loss to the second fellow. The second fellow who actually received the gift. Another possibility. How did the second party, what kind of matona did he receive? Ibe Matnas Shchiv Meira Nami Yavon Yalei. And if the second party, similar to the first party, received the gift using the language of a Shchiv Meira, characteristic of a deathly ill individual, he too, the second party, received his shtar with that language in it. Rashi at the top indicates how you can identify language-wise the difference. Nevertheless, less boy pseudo. There's no loss to the second fellow. The basrei sazochi, he as the second receiver, second one with the later date, will win anyway. The kahodar be mikomaisa. The second date in his document indicates to us that the Shchid Merah had a change of mind. So that by giving the first fellow, the one with the earlier date, his Matna Shchid Merah, that's not going to cause any wrongful loss to the second fellow. So if the whole issue of, let's say, concern was maybe wrongful loss to a second party who actually received a title of deed from this giver, by giving the document to the first fellow, we're not causing this second guy any loss. Ki kotani babraisa, the Tanaic source we saw at the end of Omer Aleph, in which it said, even if both parties agree that it should be given to the receiver, Bibori, the giver there, to the we'll say the document that's being returned is a document that indicates a shtar of a matona of a bori, a healthy individual, or the language in the braisa shtar that said we're not returning. The language there is a matnas bori, delabe mahadirhu. It's not a type of matona that can be retracted. Can be mahadir has as a root hodar, chozar. Chozar means to return from, to back out of. It's not once you give a matnas bori, you can't back out of it. De amrinon, in such a case, if we were going to give the shtar, this lost shtar, the found, recovered shtar to the first party, here we will see a possible wrongful loss caused to a second receiver. At this point, we'll see everything we saw in the Rashi that we saw at the bottom of Omer Aleph. What's the problem here? Why will, in the case of a matnas bori, why will we not give it to that receiver, the fellow's name who's designated therein? Because Dilma Kosvola Hai Me Korob Yamlich Velo Yohavoli Velo Yohavoli. Maybe the document was written up to give it to this first guy, but it was never really given. It was never really given to him. Title to the property in question was never granted in actuality to this first party. The owner is saying, give it to him. Maybe it was never in the past actually given to him. And later on, the original owner gave it in actuality, in reality, to a second party. And now, the original owner is having regrets of having given the gift to the second party. And the original owner figures, Mehader lo matzina hadrana be. Simply to retract, I can't retract, I gave it to the second party in a full-fledged, legitimate fashion. Eimar lohu, you know what, I'll tell them, the ano lehai yoav so, v'nehadru nihalei ksova, I'll tell the court that I gave it to this first guy. It's not true, but I'll tell them I gave it to this first guy, and they will give the shtar, that found shtar, to the first guy whose name appears therein. Kihechin, so as to ensure the following: the chimapik hai ksava dekodim, when the first fellow pulls out the document that now we're now returning to him with an earlier date in it. Zocha behu, he will win out. He'll beat out the second guy, and the second guy who was the real owner of it will lose out. So, as a result of that, the Brisa says, "Don't give it to the name to the party whose name appears in the document." Elo, amrinon le. We rather will do the following. In a case like that, where you have a found document and it's a matnas bori, we'll tell the giver as follows. And over the next 8 lines of the Gemara is what we will tell him.
Elo Amrinon Le Anan. We will tell, the court, will tell the original owner, who is telling us to give the shtar, the matnas bori, to the first guy. Haik Sova, this document that was found, Lo Yavino Le Lahai. We're not going to give it to the one you said to give it to. Dilmo Michtav Kasvis, we're afraid of everything we said before. Maybe you wrote it up as a gift. Mav Lo Yavis Niale, but you didn't actually give it to him. Viavsa Linishachrino, and you in reality gave the land in question to a second party, the Kohajus Bay, and you are now trying to back out. You're regretting it. If you never gave it to some second guy, and you want to really give it to this first guy whose name appears in the found document, so write up a new document with today's date in it, and give it to that party. Had you given it to a second party beforehand, less bob seda, there'll be no loss to that second party. They called him Zachi because his shtar has a date earlier than today's date. So with all of this, we've explained why the Braisa says lo yachsir, and the Gemara went even further to say how we deal with a person claiming give it to the party whose name appears. Maski flo Rav Zvid, v'ho idi v'idi dat kais kotoni. Both sources, the Mishnah and the Braisa, make mention of a daitiki. Daitiki is a matna shchiv meira. So how can you explain the Braisa as dealing with the shtar as a matnas bori when the Braisa makes reference to a matnas shchiv meira as well? Ela Omar Rav Zvid, ha v'ha. Notice we have now approach Roman numeral number 2. We have to resolve two sources: the Mishnah source, the Mishnah, from which we inferred that ha Omar Tnu Noisim, that if the original owner says give it to him, we give it, and the Braisa that says no, and both shtaros in question are matnas shchiv meira. They have the language of a document indicating that the giver was was deathly ill. So both are dealing with the same kind of document, velo kashya, and still there's no contradiction between the sources. Ha bay, the ha bivrei. One deals with the shchiv meira himself. The Mishnah deals with the shchiv meira himself, and we'll see in the Braisa deals with the son of the shchiv meira, where in that case, where the shchiv meira actually died, and we're now dealing with the son of the shchiv meira. There, we will say we do not give it to the designated party. Once again, take note of the the diamond. We're going to explain the Mishnah on the one hand, the Braisa on the other hand. And we also have a long marking taking us to the end of this particular discussion. It's one long answer. Masnisin de ka'omar tenu noisnim, the Mishnah from which we infer that if the original owner says give it to him, the one whose name appears in the document, we give it to him. Bididei. Who's the speaker? Who's telling us what to do? Him. Bididei. Him. The Shchiv Meira himself. The Bar Mahadehu. As we explained earlier, he has the power to reverse, to have a change of mind. And in the case of the Mishnah, there's no wrongful loss that's going to arise. The Amrinon, we figure as follows: Inami Yoavo Leini Shachrino Les Bob Seda. Even if he actually had given the parcel of land to a second individual, there's not going to be any loss to that second individual. The Kama Ubasra, if you have a conflict between the Kama is the first guy, the first receiver, and the second receiver. Basra Zochi, the second receiver, the one with the later date, will win out the Hohodarbe Mikamo, because the Shchivmera backed out of wanting the party, the first party designated to receive it. And as we said, here we're dealing with the Shchivmera himself, even if the first party has a shtar with an earlier date. And taking into consideration all of our suspicions that we raised before, maybe it wasn't really given to the first guy, but it was given in actuality to the second guy, and now he has a change of mind. That's not going to make a difference. It's not going to cause any loss to the second guy, because the later date that the second guy has is a reflection in our mind of the Shchivmera having had a change of mind, and he will maintain his legitimate ownership of it. Namely, that second fellow will maintain ownership of land and not be subject to any wrongful collection. Ki kotoni bebraiso afal pi shishnei moedim lo yachzu lo loze velo loze. The braiso that spoke of lo yachzu, no return, do not return the found document to either party. Bevrei, we're talking about the son of the Shumra. The Shumra died. The Amrinon, we figure as follows. Dilma Kosav Avua Lahai, where we suspect that maybe your father wrote up the shtar to give it to this first individual, the one that you're telling us return it to. Ve'amlich v'lo yavar ni'alei. And he didn't give it to him at all. Your father never gave it to him. Ubosar avua kosav ihu le'inish achrina v'yavale. And after your father's death, you, the son, you wrote up as an heir to the property. You wrote up a shtar and gave it to a second party, who became the real owner of it. Fahasta kahodar be'mehu. And now you, the son, are having regrets of having given the inherited property to a second individual. Savar, you, the son of the Shumra, are figuring you can't just back out. You gave it to a total legitimate gift to a second party. Amar lahu, so you figure like this. I'll tell them. We're speaking now from that son's vantage point, who realizes he can't simply back out just because he regrets having given the gift. So I will tell the court, the Abba Yavale Lahai, that father gave the parcel of land to this guy, the we'll call them the first guy, the fellow to whom we're not giving the shtar back to. I'll tell the court that father gave him the land, Venesfule Kasve, and the court will give him, that first guy, the shtar, Velezo Velepuk Mine Dahai, and then he will go, that first guy that I'm claiming father gave it to, will go and extract the property from the guy I gave it to. And I and he will then split the booty. Of course, this is all what we suspect, this foul play, and we call this a knunyo. You'll see that term in Rashi, a scheme, and the son is calculating all of this in his telling us return the found document to that fellow, to the first guy whose name appears in the shtar. Hilkoch Amrinon le'anan. Therefore, we, and similar to what we said before, if such a situation arises, we have someone saying, give the shtar back, and we're worried about all of the above, this is what we'll tell him. The next six lines. We tell the son of the Shchivmera, Hai kasvo lo yavino le'lahai, we're not going to give the shtar back to the fellow you're telling us to give it to. The Dilma maybe everything we said above, all of the suspicion, we're now going to repeat it. Maybe Mirtav Kasvi Avua, yeah, your father may have in fact written up this found document. He wrote it up, Meav Lo Yavole, but never gave it to that first guy. Viavte At Linishachrino, and you as an heir gave it as a gift in reality to a second party, Vokajusban, you are regretting it right now. Eloi Kushto Koamris Diav Le Avuch, if you are telling us the truth that your father gave it to that to the guy whose name appears in the shtar, you're claiming that he is the real owner of it. Well, Zil At Hashto Kosiv Le Shtaro Achrino, you go write up a new document with today's date in it. Dinami Lo Yoavole Avua. Even if your father didn't give it to that first guy, the Kasvise Atlina Shachrino, and you gave it to a second party and are now having regrets over that total gift that you gave, Lesbe Pseido, there's not going to be any loss to that second guy. The Kamu Basro Kamazochi, in a case like this, you'll have that second guy that you may have given it to. He has an earlier date than the date of today's shtar that you're writing up for that the fellow you're claiming your father gave it to. And in such a case, we have a conflict between the Kamo and the Basra. Kamo, ironically, is the usually Kamo means first, but it means the earlier date, which will appear in the shtar of the one to whom you gave it to, in, that you may have in reality given it to. If he is sought out for collection by the guy whose name appears in this found document, who will be using his new shtar with which to collect, which is the Basra, the later date, Kamazochi, that other guy, will win out, will not be subjected to any wrongful collection. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a Nosei, topic heading, Motzo Shoivar Isha. This is a our fourth diamond in the list of diamonds referring to the found documents. We saw in the Mishnah Shovarim, we're not to return them. The Shovar, in this case, literally is a receipt. It would be a woman writing a receipt to her husband that divorced her. Upon divorce, she collects the ksuba payment. That's the financial guarantee a woman receives upon getting married, upon her marriage. Then in the event of either widowhood or being divorced, she collects money that we refer to as the ksuba money. The woman, upon receiving payment, she would write a receipt to the husband that she received payment. And now we are going to deal with a found shovar. Tonu Rabbanan. Motza shovar. Bizman shu isha moida yachsir labal. In the event that the woman admits, I got my ksuba payment, you can give the husband the receipt. We give it to him. Eino isha moida lo yachsir lo lozer v'lo lozer. If she does not admit, then we don't give it back to either party. When the woman says, yeah, I got my ksuba payment, give him his receipt. Is that so smooth? Should we not suspect that maybe she wrote up the receipt with the Nisan, with a Nisan date in it? Ad Tishrei. And she didn't give him the receipt until Tishrei, which, in if that were the case, it means for us it means she hadn't received her ksuba payment until Tishrei. V'ozla zavnesa l'ksuba b'tevasano minisan v'at Tishrei. The Gemara is describing here a procedure that you find in other Gemaras too, one of the more prominent sugis you find at the beginning of Maseches Makis. And we find it elsewhere. A woman, while married, has an option. of selling her ksuba at to an outsider, who in the event of her becoming either a widow or her being divorced, payment would be made to the outsider. Call him, in this case, we'll call him the lekuchos. Lekuchos means the purchasers. They purchased option rights to her ksuba. Inevitably, the amount that they pay will be worth less than the face value of the ksuba. A woman is given a certain financial guarantee at the beginning of her marriage. Does that woman definitely collect the ksuba? Certainly, we can't say definitely. In the event that she predeceases her husband, no ksuba payment is made. That's quite obvious. So the ksuba payment that a woman expects is a matter of chance. Outsiders might accept her offer, her willingness to sell to them her ksuba, and they'll pay an amount that's worth less than the face value of her ksuba. In our case, maybe we should suspect the following, that there's a receipt written up with Nisan appearing in it. She wasn't divorced, or I should say she wasn't paid her ksuba until Tishrei. Between Nisan and Tishrei, she sold her ksuba collection rights to lekuchos, to purchasers. The amount they pay is called in the Gemara Toivas Hanah. Without any need to translate the word Toivas Hanah, that's simply, for our purposes, the amount that they paid to collect her ksuba. Now, if we give the this woman, by the way, since she wasn't paid until Tishrei, prior to Tishrei, she had a right to sell the ksuba. So the sale that she made was a good sale, and these lekuchos bought the rights to the ksuba. What that means is that if the husband divorces her, they have a right to collect her ksuba. If we're going to return this shovar, this receipt, to the husband with the Nisan date in it, she may have sold her ksuba rights to purchasers between Nisan and Tishrei. Umapik le lashovar de kosev benisan. The husband will pull out the shovar, the receipt that has the Nisan date in it. That Nisan date would indicate that she no longer had the right to sell her ksuba when she had received the ksuba payment already in Nisan. The Asa Lemitraf Lekuchos Shelo Kadin. And the husband is going to come to collect from the Lekuchos Shelo Kadin. What do we mean by that? Those parties who purchased her ksuba rights, claiming that they should be paid the ksuba, the husband would say, how could you have bought the ksuba rights after Nisan when she had already been paid the ksuba from Nisan? So the lekuchos who have figured that they were buying a ksuba from a still married woman are going to end up losing out. We've spoken about purchasers buying ksuba rights. Oftentimes the ksuba is paid in terms of a land collection. In the scenario we described, they bought the land earmarked for her ksuba and are really the legitimate owners of that land that they bought from her, but the husband, upon pulling out the receipt with the Nisan, the earlier date in it, is going to be collecting that land that they took possession of, Shelo Kadin. Once again, why is it Shelo Kadin? Because in practicality, she had a right to sell them the rights to her Ksuba, and they became the legitimate owners of that land upon his divorcing her. Why then are we not worried about that happening by through our giving the shovar to the husband? As you can see, we have a double underline marking, and on the side of the Gemara we have a mivneh, structural note. We will see tshuvos of Rava and Abaye. Rava you see here, and third line from the top of Chof Amar Aleph you see Abaye. The answers of Rava and Abaye la'sheila to the question Lama machzirin lebaal shovar. Why would we return a receipt to the husband Hameid al kach sheshilein lo ksubasa, that testifies that he had already paid her the ksuba? Hare yesh lach shosh, are we to concern ourselves shema kosva shever lite benison? Maybe he wrote it up to give it in Nisan, but hadn't given it till much later, till Tishrei, namely up till Tishrei, she had not really been paid her ksuba. V'yavo lidei hefsel alukuchos, and that will cause a loss to those purchasers, shekanu ksubas v'imenu metevas anah bein Nisan l'Tishrei, who bought the ksuba rights between Nisan and Tishrei and are in actuality the real owners of the land that was earmarked for the ksuba payment. The husband will come along with his earlier Nisan date and take away the land from them. Why then are we not worried about that? Omar Rava. We continue at the top of Chof Amar Aleph. Shma Mina. From here we conclude, from the fact that we're not worried about that, Esau le Shmuel. Shmuel's principle is a reality. Esau means there is Shmuel's din. So from our Mishnah and the inference from it that if the wife says give it the receipt to the husband, and we're not worried about a wrongful loss to the Lukuchos, Shmuel's din must be operative. It must be that we accept Shmuel. The Mishnah then would be a support to Shmuel. The Yomar Shmuel, what does Shmuel teach? Shamoicher shtachoiv l'chavera v'chozer u'mochloi mochul v'afilu yoresh mochel. A person who sells a bill of collection, standard bill of collection, is a lender who received a bill of collection from a borrower. In our case, in our immediate case, the woman has a bill of collection in the form of the ksuba. She's like the lender in the sense that she's the one expecting payment. One who sells a shtar chov, who sells a bill of collection to a purchaser. People buy these documents, as we've indicated before, at less than face value because of, we'll say, the risk factor, or a person who sells a bill of collection, he knows that it'll take him another year to collect the money. He wants some immediate cash, so he'll sell the document at less than face value for the benefit of getting immediate cash. True, it's less than the face value of the loan, but that's how people behave. So Shmuel says that people who sell bills of collection, people that were entitled because they, let's say, they lent money, or in this case, the woman who had a ksuba payment due to her, one who sells it to a purchaser, and then that original party, the lender, or in this case, the woman, forgives the loan. Mochlo. Mochal. It's to forgive. To forgive a loan. Forgive the borrower of the loan. You don't have to pay me. In this case, the woman saying to her husband, you know, you don't have to pay me the ksuba. That mechila takes hold. And what that means then is the guy who purchased the rights to collect isn't going to collect from that, from the borrower. Or, in this case, the one who purchased the ksuba from the woman is not going to collect from the husband, because the husband was relieved of his rights, of his obligation. The husband was relieved of the obligation. And Shmuel goes, even a yoresh, even the heir to a lender has that power to relieve the borrower of the obligation to pay up the debt. Oh, so if that's the case, the woman, it's true, she may have sold the ksuba collection rights to the purchasers, a legitimate sale, but she at the same time has the power to relieve the husband of the obligation to pay the ksuba. So the husband will continue holding on to the land that was earmarked to her ksuba, and those purchasers are unable to collect. They have no claim against the husband. As far as the fact that people bought their money and are not going to be able to benefit from their purchase, that's a separate issue. That's a separate issue that we're not dealing with here. Are they entitled to any form of compensation from the original party? That, as I say, is a different issue. But as far as collecting from the husband, those purchasers have no claim from the husband, because when she, as the original owner of the ksuba, the original power that she had to collect her ksuba, she has a right also to forgive the husband of ever having to pay it. Therefore, no wrongful loss. When I say no legally wrongful loss arises in our giving the shovar to the husband. Abaye Omar, afilu temo lese l'dishmul. Abaye says, even if you take the approach that we don't accept Shmuel's din, hocha b'mayaskinon, here in our Mishnah, where we give the shovar back to the husband when she says she received her ksuba, b'sheshtar ksuba yoytze mitachas yodo, that's where the woman herself is holding the ksuba. If she's holding the ksuba, that indicates she didn't sell it to some other party. So there's no purchaser that's being subjected to loss, because there was simply no purchaser. She's holding on to the ksuba. Verova Omar, imi shum shtar ksuba, if that's what you think is your guarantee that she didn't sell it, that does not prove that, that's no proof that she didn't sell it. Chayshinon l'shtei ksubos. We suspect that maybe there were two ksubos, and that the original ksuba that she had, she did sell it to those parties. And if you don't accept Shmuel, then we would be subjecting them to a wrongful loss. So Rava says we must say that Esau led to Shmuel. And that when she says give the shover to the husband, in effect she has the power to relieve the husband of all ksuba obligations from the outset. The Abaye Omar. Abaye says back, he says as follows, that from the Mishnah we can't say there's support to Shmuel. And as far as what Rava just said, Abaye has a response. Point one, chada l'shtei ksubos lo chayshinon. We don't suspect that there were two ksubas, and therefore if the woman is holding the ksuba, as I said, that's proof she never sold it, and that there's no loss to any purchasers. The oid, and furthermore, shovar bizmanoi torif. The shovar, the receipt, and the entitles, we'll say entitles collection, so to speak, from the date that is written therein. So that even if the husband didn't actually pay the ksuba to the woman until Tishrei, it's considered as if it's totally paid up from the date that appears in the shofar. And this is Abaye Letameh. Here Abaye, who's the speaker, is is consistent with what he has said elsewhere. D'yomer Edov b'chasumov zochen la. We saw this expression earlier today, that witnesses upon their signing grant ownership to the holder of the document. And therefore, min hadin, by letter of the law, the husband would win out over purchasers, and it's not considered a wrongful loss that's caused to them. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.